You are now listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans, with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey Stewart.
Let's get the shit out of Charlie. It's all right, Charlie. It's okay. Hello.
That's an interesting way to start the podcast.
It certainly is.
Welcome to episode 12. We've hit the does in season 3. And today we are coming to you from, a new set. When I get my act together and edit up all these videos, you'll see a transition in the set. So if you've followed along with Soul Trader, more than just the podcast, which I would like to think you have. Now, you might hear a car going past occasionally.
Maybe an odd crow.
Yes, there was a crow earlier. It's just adding to the ambiance.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically at my place, I've got a studio in the house, a space in the house where I've been recording from, and we wanted to kind of just test out kind of being out here in the what is the shed, which still has some further kind of insulation and soundproofing to kind of happen. But I just thought, well, why the hell not?
Well, a change of scenery is as good as a holiday,
yeah,
I suppose.
Come out here and see how it kind of works. So we've got a basic kind of setup at the moment, and it's going to evolve over time. And it's kind of, I just got up this morning and put it all together. So it's kind of,
Look, you've done a fantastic job. And of course, this means absolutely nothing to anyone who's listening to the podcast because, of course, you know, the joys of sight is not not that apparent through an audio sort of podcast. But if you are seeing the video of this, you'll see that there's a lovely sort of wood grain wall. There's a wonderful jacket.
There's my jacket.
I suppose some shelving in the corner there with some memorabilia and a funny looking, I think there's Ed Sheeran with a green hat on, sort of sitting there as well.
That's my Irish leprechaun from when I was in Ireland.
Oh, right. Oh, is that what it is?
And then I've got a pair of sneakers.
It was Ed Sheeran with a beard.
I've got a pair of little sneakers because the long story about those sneakers is, no, the short story is that they are baby sneakers, but they are coloured in the same as a pair of Kobes I got. So I wear Kobes at my gigs that I do solo stuff. I have at my Soul Trader gigs before we kind of put the duo back together. And they are, the shoes didn't arrive in time, so they got these kind of mini ones to give to me on Christmas Day. And in those sneakers are little Star Wars figurines.
Right.
Now, the reason why I put those there is because on the other set, we had the couch in the background with some Star Wars stuffed toys on it. So I thought, why the hell not?
Yeah. All this will be apparent once you see the video.
Yeah. And then there's a kiss picture because why the hell not?
Well.
And we didn't have a Wiggles picture to put there.
I mean, fantastic.
But yeah, I mean, it would be interesting. I was going to say I can hear a bit of echo, but anyway, we're testing out this new space and we're just seeing how it kind of goes, we'll find out how this kind of sounds, I guess, and whether we need to kind of hang more sound blankets around the place in lieu of the insulation and more soundproofing, which would be coming down the line.
It's like with anything, you know, it's you're making it up as we go along and it's all a work in progress. So
that sums the podcast. That should be the Soul Trader podcast. We're making it up as we go along.
Well, most of the time we do. And we do pretty well, I think, with all of that. But
Another addition I've got to mention is some felt coasters for the table. So
yes.
You can't really hear.
Nice. Okay.
This is old.
Yes.
That's old. That's new.
Right.
And you can't even really hear that, can you?
Not really.
No. See, we used to have to put down our glasses really carefully. And if there was any video in the past where we've had to put a glass down, we're like putting it down in slow motion. Now we can slam it down and you can barely hear it.
So you and I can have a Barney on the podcast and I can just slam the podcast mug down and walk out and not make too much noise.
well, the mug won't make any noise. I mean, you walking out might.
That's right.
When you smack your head on the light stand like we have about five times today.
Yeah, I know.
I think the count is me, four, you, one.
Yeah, that's right.
But yes. Anyway. So we're at the does and we had a bit of a boost in listens this week, which was nice, a little bit of uptick, which is great. Please, if you're listening, share the podcast around on your social medias.
Share the love.
Whether it be the podcast in general or an episode that you really liked, please share and always come and comment when we post the podcast.
Or if you run, you know, a podcasting school and you want an example of how not to do it, by all means.
Yes.
You know, let everyone hear what we do.
If you listen to our podcast religiously and you listen to episode 10 thinking, this sounds a lot like episode 9, and then we realized that we'd uploaded the same episode twice instead of the new file, which
is
cool. I don't
know how that happened.
It happens, you know.
Oh, of course it does.
But
we rectified it.
You know, we were flooded with we weren't. I picked it up. We weren't flooded with people saying, this is sounding a lot like last week's episode and doesn't seem to be about the topic that it says it's about. But anyway, that's rectified now. So if you listen to episode 9 and then listen to 10 and went, this is, I think it was 10. But anyway, you listen to an episode and it was duplicate. Go back. It's now right. It's now the right episode. So
absolutely.
Anyway, moving right along to this week's topic. I'm not sure.
It's all about trucks.
Every now and again, there's a loud one. And I'll be interested to, as I said, we'd be interested to see how this turns out. And, you know, at some point, I will soundproof this shed completely. That ain't happening anytime soon. So, you know, it may be that we retreat back to the other room in the meantime for the podcast, because obviously we want, you know, this to sound as good as possible. And it is a challenge with, you know, the road kind of close by. Yeah. I think it probably came from, you know, the books that I've been reading, which we've spoken about a bit in the podcast. But
50 Shades of Grey?
Yeah. Jesus. Yeah, no.
Oh, that's one of the books you're reading. Oh, okay, fair enough.
Not if I live for 1,000 years, I think. It's probably a safe way to put it.
Or The Brief History of the Wiggles.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe.
No, I mean, I don't, you know, that's you. You know, I'm interested by those.
Sorry, I'm interrupting here.
So. No, that's fine.
Go for it.
Basically, it was the why. The question was, what's your why? You know, people, you know, why are you doing what you do? And I just thought it's an interesting thing as to, you know, why do you do music? Why do you create? You know, what's the reason? And I also thought that there is the reason from when you maybe first started versus now, and maybe the evolution of that, which I thought, you know, it's not necessarily a static thing. And I think that's probably true of life as well, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I think so.
Your motivations in life to do certain things change.
Yeah, I think that's a question that people don't ask themselves that often, is the why are we doing, you know, why do we do what it is that we do?
Yeah, I mean, somebody might occasionally yell at you, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
But
in terms of the broad picture, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, I would imagine that majority of people would just go through their life doing things that they do because it's what they've always done. And what they've always done has been a series of small changes ever since they were born to the time now when they're doing something. And they don't necessarily stop and question, well, why is it that I do that in the morning? Or why is it that I do this? Or why is it that I do that? I suppose knowing the why sort of gives you more perspective on, you know, how you can make things better or how you can change your direction or whether it vindicates, you know, the decisions that you made, because, you know, the why is sort of moving congruently with your, you know, ethics and your way of seeing the world and all of that.
Yeah, and I think, and we'll get into this obviously, I think as we discuss the evolution of maybe our whys, but I think there's this kind of thing where you know, as you say, people don't think about it too much, that you might it might be superficial in some ways. Maybe when you start out, you know, you've got this kind of thing as to why you want to do something. But I think the thing is that when you continue to do something, like for a long period of time, where it just becomes part of you,
yeah,
then the why is something that you may not even be super conscious of, because it is. So it's kind of going, you know, what's this? What actually motivates you? If you sit back and go, oh, okay, what is it? But yeah, just maybe we just start at the beginning. I mean, and we may have spoken about this slightly in other episodes, but what was it for you that kind of, you know, first set you out as a youngster, teenager, whatever, thinking, I want to do that music thing? Was there a...
Well, I was always a kid that sort of, you know, would go and, you know how parents would say, oh, you know, go and play outside, you know, go and play outside, do whatever, you know. I never really wanted to do that. I wanted to just, you know, play with my toys in, you know, in silence in my bedroom, or be inside, you know, or just draw, or, you know, while singing songs to myself and you know, just making things up. And
can I ask a question? Sorry to interrupt, but I mean, just thinking about previous episodes, I mean, people have probably listened to that.
Yeah.
Was some of that from, you know, you were bullied at school? Do you feel like sometimes you're just kind of like, I want to be in control here, be in my own space, you know?
I was always a sensitive kid, and I was always
Charlie. You can't do that.
Charlie. We've got Charlie the studio dog here as well, and I think something has set him off. Come on.
There might have to be some edits in this podcast.
There might have to be. Okay, so yeah, I mean, I've always been a sensitive kid, and I always wanted to, I play with others and all that sort of stuff, but I mean, you know, some kids would want to go and climb trees and do all that sort of stuff, and it's like I didn't see any interest in that. I had a cousin who was born a month before me, and he would do all of those things, like go and climb trees and do all of that sort of stuff, and I'd sit there and watch him fall out of the tree and break his leg and all that sort of thing. So that would stop me from being inspired to go and play outside. But no, I mean, I always wanted to sort of use my imagination and build this sort of world and stuff like that. I suppose some of that was, you know, between the ages of 5 and 13, I had real issues with my ears. And to the point now where I've got, you know, I've always had around 15% hearing in one ear because of, you know, a medical procedure that didn't go very well. So there was a period of time where, you know, that sort of got in the way of, you know, my sort of development with other people, because I'd always be in hospital, or I just couldn't hear, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would spend a lot of time by myself. But yeah, I mean, I was always sort of making, you know, things up, or drawing or writing, or, you know, making up little songs and stuff like that. And, you know, it was only until I got to high school, where there was a music department, and, you know, sort of that's where I really, really discovered. I knew that, you know, something like that would be a good fit for me, but until I actually immersed myself in that, you know, the answer wasn't prevalent until, you know, my first music class. And it's like, oh yeah, it's like I've come home, you know. It's like I've found my tribe. I've found what it is that I wanted to do. And so, you know, in the first year of high school, everyone did music, and you know, there was also an agricultural component of the school as well.
And then there was other sort of electives. And in the second year, we had I had a choice of, you know, continue on with agriculture or continue on with music. And the choice was really, really simple because I hated getting my hands dirty.
Mm.
So I thought, yeah, I'll go and learn an instrument. But I wanted to do that anyway. But I hated agriculture, you know, sort of just the thought of, you know, watching people, you know, knacker sheep and, you know, bloody just getting filthy dirty and doing all that sort of stuff. It just did not interest me at all. So yeah.
And there's me living on a farm.
What's that?
And then there's me living on a farm.
Well, I suppose it's different, you know, when you're born into that.
Yeah, I mean, my parents weren't farmers, though, so it was just...
Yeah, but you're more out in the country than I was, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so...
If you would have lasted 2 seconds out there,
no. No, well, I probably wouldn't, actually.
I mean, yeah. So as a teenager, you know, moving through high school...
Yeah.
So, obviously, you just kind of enjoyed creating stuff in that, you know, in those early days.
Yeah.
You know, it was an enjoyment of the creativity, I guess. And just thinking of it from a Y perspective. But then through high school, did that kind of change in terms of now you're performing potentially music in front of people and I'm guessing transition to an instrument you wanted to play?
Yeah, well, the big thing was, you know, when I got into high school, I got out of an environment which, as you said before, you know, there was a lot of bullying and all that sort of stuff. So I managed to get myself into a high school where I didn't know anybody. So it's like, okay, well, now is my opportunity to, you know, really make a go of it. And thankfully, you know, it was a high school that had some sort of specialist music program in there. And the...
Charlie, it's a crow, dude.
And the music, you know, the music students were fairly popular. So it's like, okay, well, you get addicted to the popularity aspect of it as well.
Yeah.
And for the first time, you know, I was in... a group of people that were looked at favourably, you know, rather than being the one on the outside of a group of people. You know, I was right in the middle and, you know, that's just like, you know, giving, you know, lollies to a diabetic basically. So, yeah. But, you know, there was that element. There was the fact that I was, you know, I just took to it like a duck to water. I was really good at it.
Yeah.
And it's always good to do something that you know you're good at or that it came easy to, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I knew from then on that this was something that I wanted to really, really develop, you know, and see where it would take me, you know. And the teachers, you know, saw promise and was really encouraged by them. And, you know, it was just a really nurturing environment and I hadn't felt that. I mean, considering that my year seven teacher at the end of primary school said to mum and dad, you know, in the parent-teacher interview that I'd never amount to anything because, you know, I was such a basket case by the end of it. You know, considering that was the diagnosis, you know, at the end of primary school to being in high school where it's like, you know, the world was absolutely my oyster.
Yeah.
You know, that gets very addicting, you know. You know, in terms of intellectually finding, you know, sort of solace in the artistic pursuits and all that sort of stuff. No, I was just drunk with this addiction of popularity at that stage. You know, I found the more serious meaning later, you know.
Yeah, but, so it was kind of a, it was that kind of attention.
Oh, absolutely, because I had none.
Yeah.
You know, and then you had it all and then it all went in my head, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, God. You know, if I met myself now, you know, if I met myself who I was back then now, I'd slap him in the face, good and proper.
Right.
You know, because I was a right little shit. because, you know, you just goes to your head and you just become really arrogant and really self-centered and as all teenagers are, I suppose. But I could have done a better job at that. But anyway, that's all part of development, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I started playing guitar and, you know, obviously I was listening to Kiss and things like that, and a mate who played guitar was like, I'll teach you how to play guitar. So he started teaching me how to play guitar and, you know, started kind of, you know, effectively writing songs and mm-hmm. wanted to form a band and all that kind of stuff. But the motivation was totally like looking at Kiss and kind of going, girls and money, awesome. What else is there?
Yeah.
And popularity, obviously, which I didn't have any of. But the funny thing is that, so my motivations back then were, popular, everybody loves me, mm-hmm. Girls and money.
Right.
Still haven't got any of those all these years on. So it was kind of those, the motivations had to be adjusted.
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, I suppose, you know, when I was saying the more serious aspects of the why of doing music sort of comes into play when, you know, you first start playing music, it's like, oh, you know, I'll get laid and I'll make money. And when none of that happens, it's like, well, there's got to be something more than me not getting girls and me not getting this and me not getting that. It's like, oh, right, there's a more serious side. There's a more artistic side. There's a deeper meaning to all this. Okay, well, I'll explore that instead.
I was going to say, is there though, or is it just like, maybe there's some girls who like arty. I'll go for serious and deep. It's just like, maybe they'll like me then.
Oh, maybe.
But I mean, it is funny. Like if I look at all the people that I was jamming with, you know, the guy that taught me how to play guitar, all that kind of stuff. I mean, he's doing a little bit of music again now, but, and he, you know, played in a band, you know, for a while that, you know, started doing some decent gigs and things like that back then. But virtually none of them are involved in music anymore. If they are, it's very loose, as in it's like they're in cover bands or, you know, and they've been in cover bands for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, they never really pursued it with any sort of, true passion for it.
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue that I'm deluded in there. They came to their senses, but
yeah,
I
suppose it depends on which side of the coin you're on, you know, but
yeah, I mean, yeah. And so I question whether, you know, as much as I can say early on it was money and kind of popularity and girls and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. whether for me, for them, they kind of went, no, money's important, but I'm going to go and find it somewhere else because it's easier to find it somewhere else.
Oh, maybe.
And because that, you know, like that's what I look at. I look at all the people in corporate jobs and stuff. And it's just like, okay, you just, you know, you're happy to have money over being happy, you know.
But then again, I mean, I'm sure that there are people in corporate jobs that are happy and absolutely love what they do.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, just because you learn an instrument doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you totally love music and that you're doing a day job because, you know, you're not able to, you know, make it full time as a musician. I mean, there are people out there that, you know, aren't that much, you know, fans of music and, you know, probably play an instrument because they were forced to when you were growing up and all that sort of stuff.
No, I'm thinking of the, you know, I was thinking of the people who were in that same boat as me.
I understand.
They're just like,
oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to do this. We're going to take over the world as rock stars. And then it's kind of like,
oh, yeah, we all went through that, didn't we? God.
Yeah, but I mean, what I'm saying
young,
is that
dumb and full of cum, basically. Well, you know, it's like, some of the discussions that I remember having with early bands that I was in that we would form and all that sort of stuff. I wish I could be a fly on the wall back then. I'd just be giggling to myself, you know.
Yeah, well, that's...
But hey, that's the bravado of youth, isn't it? You know, you think you can take on the world and
well, that's
all
growing
that sort
up.
Of stuff.
I mean,
that's great.
Yeah, I mean, think that, you know, there's, I think that the motivations that you have now or that start to develop, I don't know, I think that some of them you know, probably started to exist fairly early on. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I mean, do you play to be popular? Maybe. I'm just thinking that some of those things are similar now. But how did that evolve for you? I mean, evolve into where you are now. Like, you know, obviously you're saying early days it was that, but you know, it sounds like you always kind of, before that, you kind of just enjoyed it.
Well, you know, I was always fairly, you know, with music, I was always fairly studious. You know, I'd get to school, you know, before anybody else, and I'd practice, and then in the music room, and then recess and lunchtime, I'd go and practice, and then I'd be there after school and practicing, and I'd do 2 hours a night and at home, and that's all I really wanted to do, you know, because I suppose it was just a means to immerse myself in a world and just get lost in it. But at that time, I mean, I wasn't playing guitar, I was playing clarinet. That was my first instrument. And, you know, according to my, as I progressed through high school, my teachers were all sort of gunning at me to go to the conservatorium, get my Bachelor of Music and either become a teacher or get into the orchestra, you know, as a clarinetist. And at the end of the day, I mean, I, you know, really did well in music. I did well with English and you know, art and all of that sort of stuff. And I just wanted to create, you know, and in between that time, I did start learning guitar and it was through there that, I wrote my first song and you know, as soon as I wrote my first song, it was just like, that was it. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And you know, we had one of the music teachers was also a guitarist in the cover band. So, you know, at the age of 16, we'd, you know, me and a couple of others would, you know, be lugging his gear around. We'd be getting into hotels and watching him play. And because we all looked older, you know, no one asked for ID in those days. And, you know, I just started really getting into that, you know. And to the disappointment of my teachers, I think, you know, I chose the rock and roll path rather than the classical music path. But you know, I still really got into the theoretical side, music theory, because I wanted to learn how to, you know, compose and write and, you know, write music rather, you know, write songs, but also write music as well, you know. So, you know, putting together little string quartets and this and that. I mean, it sounds terrible, but you know, I was still doing it, you know, and, you know, just there were no rules, I suppose, you know, learn the rules first before you know what rules to break and all of that. And just that's all I was doing to pretty much the cost of everything else. But I mean, I managed to pass. I mean, I excelled in the creative subjects, and then the other subjects I didn't do too well in, but it was enough for me to pass my my high school and high schooling, and had the opportunity to go to the conservatorium, but I chose not to because I wanted to play guitar. And you know, sort of at that time I was learning bass as well, because the same music teacher, you know, saw that I was you know, show promise with bass, and he said, well, keep on going with that, because someone who can sing and play bass is really rare to, you know, really hard to find. You'll always find work.
Yeah.
And so I just took that on board and right, okay, well, this is my path. This is what I want to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, the more I started writing, the more I started performing, the more I started sort of really getting into, you know, the creative side of music, the element of I want to be popular, I want to have lots of, you know, money and girls and all that sort of stuff started to fade away, because it's like, you know, I was getting more into artists that showed a more serious, more studious and artistic side, although I still was real Duran Duran fanatic as well. But at the same time, you know, I was right into Japan and Frank Zappa and King Crimson and a lot of progressive rock. You know, the more difficult the music was, the more I wanted to, you know, the more I wanted to listen to it and try and understand it, because, you know, three chord country songs bored the shit out of me. You know, blues music bored the shit out of me, because it's like I can just see exactly where they're going with it, and I want it to be challenged, you know. So, and, you know, if that makes me sound like a music snob and an absolute arrogant prick, well, then so be it. But, yeah, I'm a musical snob. And, you know, I'd rather play music, or I'd rather listen to music and be involved with something that challenges me rather than just enhances the status quo. Mm. You know, so music to me is far more into – is far more, you know – my appreciation of music is far more deep than just making other people happy, which is important, but, you know,
so when
it's like it's like not at the cost of my happiness or my satisfaction or my progression as a person who has a specific interest in a craft.
When you wrote that first song, what was the – you said, I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
What was the thought process with that song?
What was the thought process?
As in, I want to play this to people, or I just want to write another one of them. I'm just wondering, you know.
I was writing lyrics before then, and I had melody ideas for those lyrics, but I had no way of being able to have an instrument to perform that at the same time. And then when I wrote my first song that I was able to sit there with a guitar and strum and sing and be the total package, that was a watershed moment.
Yeah, of course.
That was an absolute watershed moment, because it's like, right, I can do it myself. You know, I don't need anybody else to help, although collaboration is good and all that sort of stuff. But I was just really sort of wanting to early, you know, way back, you know, is like, if you want a job done properly, you got to do it yourself. Now, that, I suppose that was what was going on in my head, you know. It's like, oh, well, you know, because, you know, if you can do it yourself, well, then, you know, there's the basis for when, if other people join in, you can, you know, talk to them in a specific language to, you know, get your message across and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I just thought, well, you know, all the people that I really, really gravitated towards were instrumentalists and you know, people that can get up there on stage and perform with something in front of them, not just being the singer. Because in bands before that, I was just the singer, which, yeah, that's cool. But I never felt comfortable with just, you know, you see, like Freddie Mercury, for instance. I mean, God, you know, he is my number one all-time fantastic frontman. You know, it's like I could never do that.
Yeah.
You know, but stick a guitar in front of me.
Few people can.
Yeah, but stick a guitar in front of me. You know, it's just like, yeah, I can get up there and perform and do all that sort of stuff. But take that away, it's just like, oh, I feel so naked.
It's, yeah, I mean.
And, I mean, that's a skill in itself, you know, sort of using yourself as the instrument to propel the message with your voice, you know.
Yeah, and the more you do it, the more you do it with a guitar, the harder it is to do it without.
That's right.
You know, I feel, you know, I'm the same. I kind of would feel a bit weird not having a guitar, because it just everything about you changes, you know, your posture, the way you – it's like when you see a front man who normally doesn't have an instrument singing with an instrument, they look –
Yeah, they look just as odd. Yeah. They would probably feel just as weird or awkward as someone who plays with, you know, an instrument in front of them, then have it taken away and all they're doing is singing.
Yeah.
I don't know where to put my hands. And I was told very early on, you never put your hands in your pockets, which is the first place I want to put my hands in. And it's just like, oh, well, what do? Cross my arms? No, that'll get in the way of my diaphragm. Oh, what do? You know?
Yeah. I mean, Paul Stanley's probably a good example. Like, there's times when he puts his guitar down and stuff, but he's like flinging the microphone around on a cable and like throwing it out throwing it up in the air and catching it and stuff like that. And
thank you, Roger Daltrey.
So he's doing, you know, but you've got to do things like that where it's just like, if he just stood there and just, you know, sang, he's got to be like dancing around and like getting the crowd into it. And, you know, so there's a few that can probably pull it off,
yeah.
Where they can put the guitar down and do it. But yeah, it, as you say, they look, you know, odd in either direction. But I mean, with you writing that song and thinking, yeah, this is it and I can do it by myself.
Yeah.
Was it thinking, I want to go and play this in front of people, or I just want to write another one of those?
Both.
Right.
Both. I mean, the first song that I ever wrote in regards to, you know, being able to play it and all that sort of stuff, you know, we played it in the band.
Yeah.
You know, that, and, but it was terrible. You know, it was shit. And, you know, every time that, I mean, you know, the band were friends, but, you know, every time it would come up to play that song, I mean, they just pay me out. They absolutely pay me out, because, you know, it was just such a horrible song. Not necessarily the music, but lyrically, you know. And that, I suppose, it was there that my the decision that I made was to sort of excel more in the music part rather than the lyrical part, because I was paid out so much about that particular song.
Right.
You know, and how, you know, oh, just how sugary and how awful it was. You know, it was about, oh, you don't love me and all that sort of stuff, you know, because I was writing to unrequited love at those days. I'd fall in love with girls that wouldn't know that I would exist, and that was my fuel for these songs, you know. And but
that's pretty powerful, the course.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I'm not sort of saying that that's a bad thing, but I didn't have a good time. Sort of, I wanted to write more songs and get better, but there was a long time that I didn't perform those songs because I was so ashamed of the lyrics. Because
right.
The lyrics were that bad. But I wanted to excel musically, because it's like, oh, the music's more important than the lyrics, you know. So if you're brilliant musically, it doesn't matter, you know. So, but it all come from that one song that I wrote with the guitar and all that sort of thing. And it sort of shaped my perception of who I am as a lyricist, which is only very recently sort of you know, I've been able to sort of come to terms with, you know, the lyrics that I do write. And that's why, you know, I gravitate towards writing and blogging and, you know, trying to be as eloquent as I possibly can, because there was a whole period of time before when I just didn't pay any attention to that, because I was, you know, I was just paid out a lot about my lyrics.
Yeah, you know?
And so that would be the start of my collaborating with lyricists, because I felt I wasn't good enough. But musically, I could just come up with ideas like that. But lyrical ideas, I'd always second guess myself, because I'd always remember how people reacted to the first few songs that I wrote.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of songs before I wrote my first song. After I could sing. Which I couldn't in the early days really sing. And there was like a point where I wrote a song by myself. And when I was younger and learning guitar, we had song ideas, but they weren't kind of like, yeah, this is a song. I'm going to go out and play this live in front of people. And I want to play this to people. There was a lot of, but I don't know if it's funny. I used to spend a lot of time trying to write kind of lyrics and trying to, you know, I guess think of interesting ways to relay a message, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I wrote a song called Rain, which has really fairly simple lyrics in a sense. And somebody came up to me after I'd played a set of songs and said, that song's lyrically brilliant. And I went, am I overthinking this too much? You know, if that song's lyrically brilliant, and that what that does is, you know, views as very simple language to actually, you know, describe something that's quite deep if you actually take the time to listen. And then so I probably took that kind of path, which is, you don't have to overcomplicate this. And then I had somebody later on say, you need to think about writing more complicated lyrics. And it's just like, you know, so it's, yeah. you're never going to win.
No, that's right.
And you're thinking, you know, what songs on the pop charts have complicated lyrics? You know, if there's songs like Bop going to number one, then, you know, it's just, then is there any, you know, you don't have to necessarily get overly complicated.
Yeah, like baby, 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 ooh, baby, baby, baby,
It's funny when you see.
Baby, baby, baby.
Isn't it funny when you see some of those songs when the lyrics are written out, where it's taken away from the music and what's going on, and you're kind of going, Jesus Christ, they say, you know, they say baby a lot.
I think
you don't realize just how much.
I think that would be a great YouTube video idea, a series of just us reading really, you know, really sort of banal pop lyrics, just, you know, just reading it.
Is it, are you sitting in like a high back chair with a pipe?
Well, maybe.
It's just like Corey reads lyrics.
Fractured fairy tales, yeah. Let me tell you a story. Baby, baby, baby.
And you have to have a smoking jacket on. It's like.
Well, it just goes to show that it is the words are irrelevant. It's the hook and the catchiness of the rhythm of the things. But still, glass of brandy. Yes,
fireplace. Touching on the lyric thing, I just write words and I try to think of not. I want to paint a picture. I don't want to be too predictable and obvious, but I want to kind of use simple words to create something bigger than. You know, it's a bit like when you talk about the sum of the parts. You know, like Soul Trader is bigger than the sum of the parts,
mm-hmm.
and I almost want to try to do that with words, where you read the words and you kind of, you know, there's an image in your head and it's bigger than these simple words on the page when they're put together, and you kind of like get people, you know, because I'm like that when I listen to songs and I kind of hear the lyrics and it's kind of like, oh, wow, you know, I wish I'd written that. And it's nice when you look at your own words and think, shit, I wrote that. Like, that's really good. How the hell did I come up with that?
Mm-hmm.
So, we've spoken about in previous podcasts. I mean, I probably come slightly more from a lyrical perspective, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
What's the story? What's the, that's what I think a lot of people connect with. So I think, okay, I want people to connect with this and get it or relate to it or understand it. So, you know, therefore, that's an important part. But I don't overthink it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sitting there thinking, I need to worry about what other people are going to think. I never worry about what other people are going to think when I'm writing a song. I only think, is this starting to turn into a good song? And, you know, every time you try to write a line, you're at a crossroads. You know, is this good or bad? Do I need to keep something move? And do you know what I mean? It's never like you write a line and go, I mean, I know there's people who rework lyrics over and over again. I don't necessarily rework lyrics over multiple sessions. Sometimes I'll tweak a word here or there because I just want to change slightly the context. But
for sure.
For me, it's about that because obviously I want people to connect with it. That's part of my why, I guess, in terms of getting back to what we're kind of talking about. I was just interested, you know, in terms of, you know, talking about writing songs. Like, I don't write songs unless there's somebody to listen to them. There's no need for me to write a song unless I can go and play that song to somebody.
Mm.
There's no point me sitting in a room, you know, like a, you know, you think of a crazy person who's just sitting in a room writing a song and then throwing the paper, and they're just the papers are piling up, and they're just like cackling to themselves because they're like, you know, it's like I got to get out of the room, like I got to.
Sure.
For me, it's like, I think that's a really good imagery for a video clip, though. At some point, we need to make a video clip where there's somebody sitting
well,
in a
you've
room.
You've got it on the podcast. Yeah. Now. We've got it recorded, so it's not like you
somebody
have to
can
remember
remind me
now.
In like 10 years' time. And they go, "You never made that video clip," and I go, "What video clip?" And they go, "You know, the crazy guy in the room with all the paper and the oh, thanks.
Got to write a song to match it.
Of course, of course. but yeah, if I don't go out and play, or why write it or record it, but for me, more play.
Yeah.
Then why write a new song? You know, yeah. at least for me, that's sure. how
yeah.
it is.
Yeah,
I don't kind of because it's more about the other person, in a sense. Like I go,
I suppose the main difference between you and I, and one of the things that I love about that I do love about working with you, Simon, is the fact that you know.
At least there's one thing.
Is that, you know, we are two completely different people.
Oh,
in,
yeah.
In our approach.
If we're exactly the same, it wouldn't work.
No.
No.
And so that's cool. It's almost like we're diametrically opposed. It's like for you, you know, you're saying that you write songs for other people to hear.
I'm a storyteller.
Right. Yeah. Which is fine. So you write songs for, I mean, for yourself, but you write for other people. As in you write so other people can hear. I suppose what I'm trying to say is that I don't care if anyone hears it or not. I write because I want to write it. And then, you know, I'll have a body of work that I can pick and choose that I don't need to have some sort of reason to do it, because if I don't get what it is in my head and in my heart and whatever out, well then you know, everything all clogs up and I just become very, you know, twitchy and depressed and you know, I'm not nice to be around, you know. It's like it's almost pathological, me wanting to get stuff off my chest or write, or you know, write songs. You know, there's always an avenue for a song, whether it be to perform in front of people, whether it is as a therapeutic, cathartic thing, just to get things off your chest, or if you're, you know, writing for a specific project, or if you're collaborating with somebody else, or it could be for sync licensing, or it could be for, you know, a music library, it could be for a whole range of things. I for a long time I've looked that, you know, the pathway of me and what I do is, okay, write music, get out and perform, and there's the path, you know, and I'll have more songs at my disposal than the amount that I would need to perform, but that's fine, you know. It's like, you know, they're two separate things, you know. I'm not writing songs for an album. I'm not writing songs so I can have enough in my set to play. It's like I'll just write and I'll have a pool of songs that I can choose from. But now that there's more opportunities for songs and for music to be seen, it could be put in film, it could be put in television, it could be put in games, it could be put, you know, it could be used as in theatre, it could be, you know, as I said, music libraries, sync licensing, you could, you know, perform it live or just have them on YouTube and, you know, start gaining something from there, or it could be a live stream. Doesn't have to be a physical sort of performance on stage. I mean, there's a whole range of things now, you know. And I suppose for me it vindicates the why of why do I write songs, because that's what I do, you know.
Mm.
It's all that I'm really, really good at, I suppose. I write for myself, you know. Surely there's going to be people out there that that enjoy the songs that I either perform or put out for people to listen to. And if they don't, well, then that's fine. If they do, well, then that's fine. But, you know, I write for myself. And, you know, when I perform it, I give it my all. And, you know, it's not like I don't care about the audience or anything like that, but my relationship with the audience is different to someone who is, and we've spoken about this before, you know, someone who's just purely an entertainer that gets out there and is pyrotechnics and this and that and the other. It's like I've never gone into that, you know. It's like, just give me a guitar, mic, bang, present the song. You know, I want people to shut up and listen. I don't want them to be bedazzled by anything else, because the song and that is the most important thing. What I'm doing is the most important thing, you know. And I suppose that's what has been going in, you know, on in my head, you know, when I'm writing these tunes down, you know. But you know, as you get older and as you sort of you know, go through periods of playing as a soloist and playing in bands and whatever, I mean, you know, with every experience that you go through, it's you know, it changes your view slightly of you know, the why of what you do. And I suppose the why of writing songs has always been, for me, a similar thing. You know, I write for myself. I write because I have something to say, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's something that I want to say to myself. And yes, I want other people to hear it, but I'm more than happy to just write, keep the well going, rather than sort of wait for some sort of reason to do it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but I'm trying to be as eloquent as I possibly can about it, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, I write songs because I write songs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. I mean, there's a difference between, like we're talking at the start, in terms of like writing a song with an intent. Like, I'm writing this song because this is going to be popular. People will like this. I'm going to write it like this. In me saying that I write songs, you know, for other people, in a sense, it's certainly not like that. And I don't write songs with any sort of intent at all.
Sure.
It's just that they come to me and I write them down. The ideas, whatever they might be, whether they're, you know, a complete idea, whether they're a part of a song. There's, yeah, and it's not like, it's not like I haven't written plenty of songs that people haven't heard, or only a few people have heard. And I've moved on to the next because I've written a new song, and it's better than the last, or it's better, you know, there's plenty of songs that have fallen by the wayside. But if I look at it, in terms of, I mean, it's interesting. Like, I played in Ireland. I lived in Ireland for a while, and a couple of things are interesting about that. Over there, you know, songwriters are considered storytellers. They kept the history alive before record keeping. So, basically, you know, they have a lower tax rate. So do writers and poets.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're considered a higher member of society. But the other interesting thing is, when you play gigs there, certainly back when I lived there, they used to say to the audience, "Everybody, shut up and listen to this person." And I literally played an open mic there where they said that to everybody. And I went, I basically said, you know, I don't remember exactly the words I used, but it was kind of like, you don't have to be that easy. It's just like, I'm happy to work for your attention. You know, it's just like, I hope you want to listen.
Mm.
And it was me just being myself, in the sense that it's just like, that's too easy. If you just sit there and listen, if I don't have to do anything to earn your respect or your attention, then I don't deserve your respect or your attention.
Mm.
I want to have to make you listen, where you go, holy shit, this guy's, you know, I want to start singing, and you go, oh, hang on, wasn't expecting it to be that good. You know, I'm going to listen to this guy now. So I kind of, you know, I wanted that, where it's just like I wanted to have to earn that. You know, I wanted people to listen, you know, of course. But if you're just listening because I told you to listen, be a good audience, sit there and shut up and listen.
Yeah.
You know, you might be listening, but you're not hearing.
Yeah.
You have to do more to have an audience here. And it's funny because, you know, just with the gigs that I do around town, I've just noticed more and more. Post-COVID, people have a lot more respect for musicians. No, there's no doubt in my mind, because they know that musicians had a hard time of it. So they're more appreciative of a musician taking the time to play some songs for them. And they go, you know, I know what this guy's kind of gone through in the last few years. It's been tough for musicians, and I shouldn't take this for granted, because I had to sit in my house for months on end and I couldn't go and see a live performer. So there's a level of appreciation for musicians that wasn't there before.
Yeah.
But you still have to earn it and work for it. But there's nothing like playing a song for, it doesn't matter what the crowd is. I mean, obviously an audience that have paid to see you or paid to come to a specific music show is a slightly different level. But somebody who's out for hanging out with their mates or their family at a winery or a venue, and everybody's clapping, or they come up to you and say, that was amazing. You know, you've connected in a different way. You know, there's something about connecting on that level.
Yeah.
If you go to a venue and an audience member comes, well, it's like you paid a ticket. Of course you're going to appreciate what I did, you know. So there's some extra value in some of those comments, where it's like, this person didn't have to say anything. They could have just stayed over there with their family. They took the time to walk over here and compliment me. But it's about, I just know that my personality type is ultimately doing things to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I used to coach basketball, and that wasn't about me. It wasn't about my ego. It was like when I saw people getting real benefit from it, it's just like, this is amazing. I'm having a profound effect on somebody else's life. And I think the same thing with music. So, you know, I write the song thinking, this is a good song. And then I go, I need other people to hear this, because maybe not just will they think it's a good song, but maybe they'll get something from it. As in, my songs aren't bop. My songs are a little bit more than that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of a message, you know, behind them. And so it's kind of, I go, I hope that me playing this song to this person makes their day better, makes their life better potentially, if they're listening to it in their car. You know, you'll hear people, you know, all this time, you know, first song on Precursor, you know, there was somebody back in the day when we released that album just said, that's my sunshine song. He said, I'm driving my car. That's just sunshine right there. And it's just like, fucking hell. I would have never thought that was that. But to him, it was that. And it's not that I do it, as I said, with intent. There's not an there's not an intent in the writing. There's an intent with the performing to do it justice, do the song justice.
Sure.
But you derive, this is kind of also, you know, I guess I think I said at the start, based around kind of the books that I've been reading, is it's just like that there's a lot of happiness derived from giving other people, doing things for other people. Not at your own detriment, of course. I mean, it can't be, well, it can be, but, you know, you don't want to be, you know, helping all these people and going home and just kind of going, I've just wrecked myself just for other people. You know, there's got to be a balance.
Sure.
But there is something to be said that I think that you can get from, yeah, just kind of going, wow, I those people had a really good time today and they really enjoyed what I'm doing. And because I always do the hybrid thing, like I couldn't give two shits if somebody comes up and goes, I love your version of that cover song, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go, you did a really good job with that song. But it's more what they, you know, when they connect with the original stuff, that's obviously
of course
what I'm kind of looking for.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, so for me, it's partly that, you know, it's just, I don't, I guess.
So that's the why you do what you do.
The why is the fact that I go, I've got a talent and I can make the world a better place with my talent. By performing, being part of that. Do I think that I would be happy just writing songs for other artists? That doesn't say that I would love to write songs for other artists. I would love to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Would I be happy only doing that? Not a chance. Because there'd always be part of me going, I can do that better than you. I feel that song more than you feel that song.
Mm-hmm.
You will never convey what I can convey by playing that song. So I'd always have to, you know,
sure,
do it as well.
Yeah.
But certainly it would be interesting writing with other people, or writing for other people, writing with other people. I mean, that's different again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're involved. Do you know what I mean? So they're involved in that kind of creation process. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, just think that I have to have those that outlet. You know, where it seems like, you know, you probably with your process wouldn't be as concerned if you weren't doing the performing as much. It sounds like you'd still want to do it, but it doesn't seem to be as the balance, I guess, in terms of if it's a pie chart. Mm-hmm. For me, it's just kind of like I got to kind of chop it down the middle almost.
Sure.
And kind of go 50% writing. I mean, there's all these other processes. Obviously, there's recording, but if we're just saying kind of writing versus performing, for me, it's probably a 50-50 kind of pie chart. I have to have a balance between the two.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that you're saying that.
Oh look, I love.
You'd be more content.
I love performing. I mean, you know, I don't not like performing. I also love being behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Basically,
you know,
yeah.
I love the cut and thrust of behind the scenes. You know, if I was able to just pick, you know, cherry pick the gigs that I could do and not have to worry about anything else, well then, yep, that's fine. But with the behind-the-scenes stuff, you're more in control. You know, if you're in the studio, for instance, and you're, you know, sort of you know, collaborating with another artist, you know, writing a song with somebody else and all that, there is this element of, you know, you are the master of your own domain. You know, as soon as you get out on stage, it's like, you know, all control is gone. And I suppose that's just, you know, I suppose that's just something that I've got to
when you say all control is gone, what do you mean? Because I feel completely in control.
Well,
I mean, until I make a mistake and then I feel
you are relying to make it work. Yes, you're in control of your own performance, but say, for instance, if the sound guy is not on board, then you're going to sound shit and you can't control that. If you have a heckling audience, you know, you can't really control that. You know, if you're playing in a venue in which, you know, the bar staff wants to play the pipe music while you're actually doing your thing and you tell them a few times to turn the pipe music down, they don't, you have no control over that, you know, unless you just explode in the ball of rage and tell them that, you know, that they're fucking idiots and they can, you know, go and shove the job up their ass, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, but if you create the domain in which you are, you know, you manufacture the environment in which you can create what it is you want to create. It's like, you know, you have everything is at arm's length, and you know, if something goes awry, well then you have the means to perhaps fix it rather than rely on somebody else
mm-hmm.
to do it. So yeah, yeah.
I suppose that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess in terms of the live versus the studio, of course, it's a different level of control. I mean, a studio is a slow kind of controlled environment, and live can be a bit more random, a bit more dynamic and things like that. We're just waiting to see if Charlie barks. He's gone for a little walk around the shed.
He's gone for a bit of a walk.
I certainly get that. I mean, the other thing is, I think that there's part of me, and this is different. I mean, if I look at it from a perspective, which is interesting, because if I'm playing solo, obviously I'm in complete control because it's just me.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, when I say I'm in complete control, obviously
there's no one else on stage.
If something happens, if I forget to sing at the right time or whatever, you just play through it and you get to the
That's right.
And you just repeat something. But and there's obviously in a lot of those situations there's no sound guy. It's always nice playing gigs when, you know, basically the people doing the sound and those other things are infinitely more experienced than you are.
Sure.
Because then you kind of feel in safe hands. But the interesting thing is that when you and I play live, the stuff that comes out of that, it's actually the unknown stuff that comes out of that, mm-hmm, that is the best stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's the fact that you and I crack jokes, and sometimes we did a fringe show last year where something happened and I just lost my shit to the point where I thought I'm not going to be able to play the next song because I'm laughing too much. And, you know, to me, that cutting edge, that walking on the edge, that's where the excitement is. And when we write songs, we'll sometimes have that in the writing process, and sometimes we've had it in the studio where we've been, I don't know if it's a flow state that they describe in one of my books, but it does feel like we're right on the edge of our kind of our comfort zone, and we're kind of like, you know, it could go, you know, badly, or it could go good, and it's just like we're just riding this wave. It's like a surfer. That's probably a great analogy. Mm-hmm. Is it's like they're just riding a wave, and it's just like, holy shit, this is. I caught a wave once on a boogie board down south. I thought I was going to drown. Up on the cliffside is my wife, her parents, my kids, and I'm thinking, I can't get into the beach. The rip is too much. I'm in trouble here. I've got a boogie board, and then a wave came. And it was the most exhilarating feeling ever. Mm-hmm. And I got sent like 40 meters up the beach. When the wave went back out, I was sitting on the sand and I turned around and the water edge was 40 meters away because it's quite a steep beach.
Mm-hmm.
Riding that wave was insane. And that's sometimes what we get when we play live. I mean, I have out-of-body experience, you know, as you kind of do when you're singing harmonies and stuff like that, where you're kind of actually sitting back listening to the two parts, even though you're doing one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But we have moments on stage where it's like that. And so I think for me, that's part of it. And I mean, I enjoy much more when we play together than I do by myself. Obviously, I get more opportunity at the moment to do the stuff by myself. But it's like, yeah, if I could pick and choose and go, I never play another pub gig and I get to play audiences who want to just listen to us play our songs, of course. But I realise that there's a kind of a bit of a work to get to that point.
For sure. Yeah,
but the thing is, that's the kind of high that I'm, you know, I think you mentioned in one of the previous podcasts, you were saying like playing a good gig where it's just going, it's better than sex. Yeah, probably.
I still say that, yeah.
You know, it lasts longer too.
It does. It does.
But, you know, the thing is that, that's kind of, I guess, what I'm chasing in the sense of my why is part of that, where you really feel like I'm on the edge here, and the audience is also kind of getting it because they're getting your best. And it's like, so that's what I'm always chasing, is that thing where I'm doing my thing at the utmost and the audience goes, you know, shit, that was like, I was right there. I was in that, you know, I was in that energy with you, or I was in that emotional moment with you, there's, as I said, that sharing, kind of that connection that you've made with a with another human being is quite amazing. And I guess I kind of chase that where, and that's kind of why I say I kind of, you know, summing it up is that's kind of why I say write for other people, because I'm trying to chase that. It's like the heroin addict chasing the first high kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just chasing that connection where they go, oh, I really got that. You know, it's just like, I think, wow, I wrote those lyrics, you know, with Corey sitting in a, you know, studio or lounge room or dining room somewhere.
Around a dining room table, couple of guitars.
And we just wrote that. And it's just like, and now the message kind of got through to you. And they go away going, that was bloody brilliant. And you go, that's pretty cool. So I kind of,
Oh, look, you know, that is cool. I mean, I can certainly see why you'd feel that. And I'm, you know, I suppose when you create something and it touches, moves and inspires someone else, you know, that transference of energy, I mean, it's, it is a good feeling, I suppose. It's, you can't deny that, you know, it's like telling a good joke and then, you know, you have a whole room of people laughing at you. You know, you get told through their laughter that what you had, the environment you created just then is worthwhile, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you performing, you're creating the environment in which you're going to have a two-way street of communication between you on stage and the audience that's out there.
You're going to have a soul trade.
Yeah.
Well, I always say to people, that's what it is. They go, how'd you come up with a name? And I go, well, it just came to me, but that's what this is. It's a soul trade.
Yeah.
I give you part of me and you give some back and it goes back and forth. It's like, it's the perfect describer of what live performing is, or of any kind, really. Whether, as you say, whether it's kind of comedy or something else.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's somewhat different in the sense that, you know, it's obviously our musical in the sense of you kind of being a little bit more music focused and me being a little bit maybe more lyrical or message focused,
mm-hmm.
you know, talking about differences. I think the differences lie more there than they do in this, although, because it is just balance, it is just the percentages of that pie are slightly different in the sense that, you know, you enjoy playing those gigs and you've said it before, but it's probably that for me,
some people that's all that they can do,
yes,
you know, and they can't live without it. Whereas, you know, I've purposely skilled up in a whole heap of other areas, and not saying that I'm an absolute master at any or anything like that, but it's like if I'm not playing any gigs, well, then I can still do other stuff. Rather than some musicians that I know, and I'm not looking at you, but some musicians that I know, all they know how to do is get out and play. So especially when COVID happened.
Yeah. If they're not a writer, especially.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, if they had no gigs, well then, you know, they're nothing. They're just a guy or a girl with a guitar sitting in their bedroom looking for a gig to play. Whereas it's like, no, fuck that. You know, there's more to life than just endlessly playing gigs.
Yeah.
You know, because yes, you know, you play your gigs, you know, not every gig is going to be an absolute cracker.
Yeah.
Especially if you're starting out. And you know.
And I should say in that I don't like playing. That's not true. I was in a trio for a while that was like a pop trio where we played just covers.
Yeah.
But me by myself, I don't think I've ever, I'm just having a quick rack of my brain, I can say with almost 100% confidence, I have never played a gig that didn't involve original material. I've never played a full cover gig and have no desire to do so.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to be that person. I have no interest in playing. I play covers
because
I have to.
You end up like me if you do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, and I think the thing is that part of that,
I'm a recovering sort of cover band artist.
But I was going to say, I mean, part of your kind of about some gigs is that, I guess, because I've lived my entire life doing what you describe as a hybrid thing, 50% originals,
yeah,
covers,
yeah.
And I've spent very little time. I was in a reggae band as well, but me by myself, it's always had the originals in there.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, until I went to Ireland in 2002, it was all originals all the time.
Yeah.
I think that probably helps. You know, it helps me go, I still love doing the original stuff. I still love doing the live stuff because it's always been about me and what I create.
Yeah.
Whereas for you, a lot of your live stuff has been about you performing for people and not doing what you love.
Yeah, and me pinning the human jukebox,
yes,
badge on as a badge of honour.
Yes.
There was a period of time where it's like, okay, you know, I must be doing well because I'm, one, making a living from it, two, I'm playing pretty much every night of the week,
yep,
and, you know, I'm the guy that knows 500 songs, you know, or whatever, you know, and I had that as a badge of honour for a long time, and my why was that I didn't want music to be a hobby because hobbies are for people who hate their jobs. So that's what I was thinking. So it's like, no, if I'm going to do this music thing, I'm by hook or by crook, I'm going to do this, you know, as a full-time thing. And the path of less resistance is to go out and the cover musician. It's like, yeah, I'll do the covers and yep, I'll find time to do my own stuff. You know, that never happened. But anyway, well, only because I was really bad at time management, I suppose, and I got addicted to the money.
Yeah. Right.
But
I was going to say, there's an interesting point. Can I interject? I mean, we should wrap this up soon anyway. But
sure. But
the interesting thing with that is that I do the hybrid thing, but it's not the same as doing all originals. And in the same way that you get addicted to the money,
yeah,
doing all covers, I've now managed to do many, many gigs, and I do every month doing a hybrid thing in venues where nobody else does originals because they're not allowed.
Yeah.
I've basically like strong-armed my way in and said, I'm good enough, let me do a gig. And yeah. And so there is, I want to, my part of my, path forward now with us working together again is basically being able to go, okay, record, and then let's get out and do more of these original-only gigs.
Sure.
Because that's where the heart truly lies, you know, where we get to just be completely immersed in doing what we do. And, you know, so there is a trap in, even in what I'm doing, there's a bit of a trap,
mm-hmm,
that I'm playing in, that I'm walking around just going, I'm playing my originals in every single venue. And it's like, you can't play your originals here and I can. You know, there's a little bit of that. And you can't let that kind of overwhelm you. I have a lot of respect for people who play the shittiest gigs in the world for no money just so they can play only their original stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing all the gigs. You know, I see them doing gigs and I'm thinking, you know, I want to do that gig. I'm thinking there was nobody there and they weren't getting paid very much, if at all, but they were doing their original stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something to be said for that as well. If you're listening to this podcast,
sure,
don't be, you know, necessarily lured by what I'm currently doing as a hybrid thing. Don't necessarily be lured by that. I think that, you know, continuing to do purely what you kind of love is kind of important. I think that if I kept on doing exactly what I'm doing now for another 10 years, I would be losing the passion for it. Even though there are audience members coming up and saying they appreciate it, I want more than that, which is a real connection with my original stuff and, you know, doing more with what we're doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's probably about it.
Well, I suppose this has been a really, really good exercise in us sort of, you know, reconfirming with ourselves the why of what it is that we do. And
absolutely.
You know, by doing that, we can see the strengths, we can see the discrepancies between, you know, you know, in the whys and how we can make it more parallel but different at the same time.
Yeah, and I think the difference, I mean, difference is important.
If sure. You and, yeah, look, absolutely.
To finish this off, if two people think the same way, they never have to have a conversation because they already have the same opinion on everything.
Well, there'd be no reason to talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, so difference is, you know, that is important. And what that also means is that you bring a different perspective and a different skill set to the table. And we have these podcasts, which this one's just ticked past an hour and 20 minutes because we're just rolling.
Oh, God.
And, you know, the thing is, though, that that the difference is, you know, this conversation comes from the differences.
Yeah.
And if we thought the same, the podcast would have been 20 minutes. Because we're going to go, I like this. I like that too. What about this? Oh, yeah. Done.
Mm. Yeah, true.
So, you know, I think that if you're, you know, you have to have common ground, you know, in a relationship.
You can get to that common ground through different means.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you're going to have some common, you know, beliefs, common understanding in any sort of relationship. For anybody who's out there who's thinking, oh, I don't agree with my bandmates on everything, or, you know, you don't have to necessarily.
Mm.
You have to have some common ground. Yeah. And the difference is actually where I always say the beauty is in the difference.
Yeah.
Because that's where the conversation is. That's where, you know, the learning is. So, yeah. But you've been listening to a slightly longer than normal. Sorry about that. We like to talk. Soul Trader podcast. Hope you got something out of it. Hope you've enjoyed listening.
Yeah, what is your why for doing things?
If we cut out the Charlie barking, it might be a minute less, but it's still going to be a long one.
Oh, no, I'll probably leave it in there. It's live.
But, yeah, look, please comment on our social media posts. You know, what do you do in your life and why do you do what you do? What do you enjoy doing?
It's always
a
good question to ask yourself. Why?
And how's that evolved and changed? We're always happy to hear, so please feel free to comment. Share the podcast around and we'll chat to you next week, I guess.
Beautiful. Until next time, ciao for now.
See ya.
You have been listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity and other plans with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey Stewart. Be sure to check out soultradermusic.com and CoreyStewartOnline.com. See you next week.